we open the chapter called the Four Aids on page number 47. We were going very slowly, but in the meantime we covered quite a good deal. The supreme shastra of the integral yoga is the eternal Veda, secret in the heart of every thinking and living being. We had just stopped here. And we were discussing the word integral yoga. And we went on a good voyage describing what is yoga, describing different yogas like Hatha yoga, Raja yoga, Karma yoga, Jnana yoga, Bhakti yoga. And then we asked the question how integral yoga is arrived at by synthesis. So we arrive at the conclusion that a synthesis of yoga is arrived at by synthesizing the objects of all the different yogas, by synthesizing the instruments of all the yogas, and by synthesizing the processes of all the yogas. Now, how we synthesize these objects, instruments and processes, we described a little, but the whole book is here before us. In due course, we shall do all that in detail. So anyway, we have some idea now, to start with, of what is integral yoga. But the statement itself is a very startling statement. You will see the wonder of the statement when he says, you don't need to read the book. That's the first answer to this question, this statement. If this statement is understood properly, it means you don't need to read the book. Because he says, this shastra of the integral yoga is the eternal Veda, secret in the heart of every thinking and living being. It's already in your heart, in my heart, in everybody's heart, secretly present. You know, there is a very interesting statement of Sri Aurobindo where he says the first principle of teaching is that nothing can be taught. You must have heard this statement quite often. The first principle of teaching is that nothing can be taught. The reason is that everything that is to be learned is already in you. There is a knowledge which is called Veda. Veda is nothing but a book of knowledge. And Sri Aurobindo says, it is the eternal Veda. It was not written yesterday, it will not be written today, it will not be written tomorrow. It is eternal. Now, what is the reason for making this statement? At the outset, it may seem very, very difficult to accept. There must be a story behind it as to how can we say that the supreme shastra of integral yoga, which we may take years and hundreds of years to understand ourselves, is however already written in the heart of everyone. So there must be a story when it was written. then only we can say it is already secret in the heart of everyone. The story is that each one of us is eternal, first of all. Although our body is born now or then, but each one of us is eternal. That means we are always, we have got some kind of immortality. Just as the Supreme Lord is eternal, so are we. Because each one of us is nothing but an image of the Lord Himself. Each one of us. It is, if you draw a picture of the Supreme, supposing you make a figure of Supreme and put His head here, and then you put another head here, this one will be almost identical with the Supreme image. So each one of us always exists. The mother had put a very nice word. We are objective forms of the Lord. You know, if you take a mirror and look into it, it is yourself, but now you will find that your object in the mirror looks at you. Although you are looking at the mirror, but there is a result of objectivization is that the mirror looks at you, your figure, that image looks at you. And because it looks at you, there is a dialogue between you and the image. As if that image is different from you. As if. The story of the world is simply the story of the Lord objectivized, resulting in a dialogue. Now, since you are yourself an image of the Lord, all that is in the Lord is in you. Now, if the Lord is omniscient, so you too. Therefore, all that is known, all that constitutes knowledge, is already secret in us. We have forgotten, perhaps. Indeed, we have. But it is secret. It is present. Since it is present, you simply have to recover it. So all learning is recovering. There is a beautiful story of Plato. You know, Plato wrote many dialogues. One day we shall take a special class only on Plato. The whole Western philosophy is supposed to be footnotes to Plato. So if you know Plato, in a general way you have known all that is in Western philosophy. Just as in the case of India, the whole Indian philosophy is footnote to the Veda. If you know the Veda, the whole Indian philosophy is known to you. Everything that is in India is easy to understand. That's why I started with the Veda with you at one stage. Although much of it may have been forgotten, it does not matter. Now there is a definition of learning. Learning is what remains after you have forgotten all that you have learned. Learning is what remains after you have forgotten all that you learned. So I have spoken to you about the Veda at length. So if you forget it, and then what remains, that is what you have learned. At least if somebody uses the word Veda, you will not stand as a stranger. You have some acquaintance, you have heard that there is something like the Veda in the world. At least that much has remained behind. And much more, which you might not be able to recollect. Similarly, one day I want to deal with Plato. Now, Plato maintained that all knowledge is remembrance. Whenever you learn something, it's only an act of recovering, remembering. Oh, now I remember. Yes, there's a recognition. All knowledge is remembrance. Now, to prove his theory, he has written a short drama, a dialogue, in which the main character is Socrates. Socrates was discussing with a great philosopher in this drama, in this dialogue, and he was discussing that all knowledge is remembrance. And the other philosopher argued bitterly against it. So Socrates said, let us make an experiment. He said, here there is a slave of yours. In Greece at that time there were slaves. There were some people who were bought and they were lifelong slaves. Usually these people used to be very ignorant, obscure, uneducated, but laborious workers. They can't refuse anything that you ask them to do. So he said, you call your slave. His name was Mino, M-E-N-O. And he said, you call him, surely he does not know theorem of Pythagoras. Pythagoras, as you know, was a great geometrician, great mathematician. And there is a very famous theorem of Pythagoras. So surely your slave does not know Pythagoras, does not know his theorem. He has not even heard geometry, the word geometry. He is ignorant, doesn't know anything. So yes, sure. So now he said, I'll demonstrate to you that he knows the theorem of Pythagoras. Not only he knows, but he will prove to you the theorem of Pythagoras. It was a surprising statement. So the slave was called, and Socrates began to ask questions, little by little, by little, by little, like a good teacher. And then he elicited the answers from the slave. It depends upon how you ask the questions. You start with the assumption that he knows already. Now you have to put questions in such a way that he remembers. He has forgotten, now he is only helped to remember. Ultimately he was able to prove the theorem of Pythagoras. He proved it. He demonstrated that the slave knew, now he only remembered it. Now this is a drama available to you. You can read this drama someday. If you have time, we shall read together. You have got the text of it, no? It's called Meno. That is the title, M-E-N-O. A very famous dialogue of Plato, in which it demonstrated that all knowledge is remembering. Because all knowledge is secret already in you.